Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined on today's show by an Associate Professor of Teaching Philosophy at Ohio State University, Dr. Stephen Brown. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Really good to have you on. And straight off the bat, I'm going to be really honest and say I very much enjoyed your presentation you done at OSU. I believe it was at your university. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
No. Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. The so I was not into anything UFO related at all until the David Grush article in the Debrief last summer, almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah,
I'm currently in Arizona about to give a talk on Buddhism at a high school philosophy camp at Arizona State University. I was here last year giving a talk on artificial intelligence. And right before I gave that talk, I saw on Reddit that this David Grush article came out. I read the whole thing and it just completely blew my mind. And I kind of followed the fact check articles that the Debrief did over the next several days. And that's what got me started. And I fell down the rabbit hole, and I've been thinking a lot, way too much ever since then, about what this means for us. I believe David Grush. I think that everything he's saying is essentially true. I mean, when one of the things I like about Grush is he makes it very clear when he's speculating and when he's speaking from his experience as an intelligence officer. you know, when he's speculating, he's just like all of us, just speculating. But when he's speaking from his experience, I believe that everything he's saying is true, which is spectacular and shocking. and so I've been trying to think about what all that means for us and for me as a person who teaches philosophy. And also kind of particularly philosophy of religion is my kind of my pet area of interest. I've been thinking a lot about what this means and how we should be thinking about how we move forward as a human family, as a species. And anyways, so when the fall came about last fall, I introduced a short unit into my introduction to philosophy class on the epistemology of UFOs. There's a couple of nice articles in some philosophy journals. I picked out one that kind of compares David Hume's argument against miracles to some issues about believing in UFOs or testimony about UFOs. And then I also did a small unit on the epistemology of conspiracy theories. Epistemology, if you're not familiar with the term, is the study of knowledge, what it means to know, what it is to have a justified belief, a rational belief. That's epistemology. We'll talk about epistemology probably quite a bit today. So anyways, I was doing that class and I'd been watching for this. I knew that the Mexico hearing was coming up. I had it on my calendar. I was looking forward to when it hit. And then, of course, these two very strange objects, Clara and Mauricio, these two Nazca mummies, which is not quite the right term for them, but close enough, were brought out on stage and shocked the world, and everybody dismissed them. And I was really taken, especially by the argument that Dr. Zalza Benitez gave about the soft tissues, the connective tissues in the bodies. And it inspired me to go deeper with it. I spent a lot of time looking into it and thinking about it. And I was just noticing how media coverage was honestly just terrible, like completely dismissive and not paying any attention to the arguments that were being given by the Latin American scientists and academics and medical professionals who were talking about it. And so I decided to have a little event with some of the students from that class, just, you know, it wasn't even for extra credit. It was just like, hey, this thing happened and I'm going to give a little talk on it. Come if you want to. And there were maybe 50, 60 students there. So I just talked to them and recorded it for my own purposes and shared it with some friends, but didn't really make it public until earlier this spring. And then, yeah, it was funny because I didn't put it on Reddit. Somebody else put it on Reddit. And there's the subreddit r/alienbodies is the one that is kind of paying the most attention to the Nazca mummies. And I think my video is actually still pinned at the top of that subreddit. But that resulted in everybody who was paying attention to the Nazca mummies knew who I was. And so I started getting floods of emails and messages on Instagram and Facebook and all over the place. People who liked the video thought that I did a decent job laying out why these things are interesting. And so at this point, I've talked to almost everybody who's working with and around the Nazca mummies, including some of the most prominent skeptics. So that's kind of how I fell into all of this. So that talk was kind of an event that I had at OSU just for fun for my students. And then it's kind of turned into this snowballing involvement in what's happening with Nazca.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've answered half my interview already. But I'm going to dive deeper into some of those because...
Great!
Yeah. It's efficient and it's an interview for the 2024.
Sure, go, yeah. We can finish early and I'll just take a nap or whatever.
That's it. We cut it up into clips. But I say about 2024 social media age. I thought, and I've got down here, that you speak to the audience you've got there in a pretty plain language. You're not telling them, you know, this is true, so you have to believe me. It's a presentation of facts and your opinion, but also a lot of logic as to why you've come to that opinion or conclusion. I think if you take the Nazca stuff out, because it seems to be there's a long introductory point to the presentation, and then you go into the Nazca stuff in a lot of detail, which is great. Just taking that introductory point out where you discuss the kind of modern history of the topic, it's a wonderful introduction to folks, I think, who are new to the UFO topic to watch that and go, look, if you don't have 20 hours to watch YouTube, Netflix documentaries, read books, listen to audiobooks, here's a pretty quick catch up to speed on what's happening in the last 5, 6, 7 years and why we are where we are. Then you get into the Nazca mummy stuff, which is really interesting in itself, and we're going to talk about all of that. But as someone, like you're saying, pretty new to the subject, did you have any interest in UFOs before the debrief article and David Grush?
So I didn't have any interest in UFO stuff. I knew basically nothing. I've to this day not seen a single episode of The X-Files. I actually used to use in philosophy classes, I would talk about situations where, you know, the evidence you need for believing someone shifts depends on what your background information is. And I literally used to use as my example, if someone told you that they saw a UFO descend out over the oval in the center of the big kind of quad area in the middle of Ohio State. And they said that it landed there and the aliens came out and talked to them. You could pretty safely ignore that, right? Like you just discount their testimony and wouldn't really have to worry about that. That was what I used to be up until David Grush. Grush was world changing for me. He definitely has the credentials. He definitely had access to just tremendous amounts of classified, highly classified information in his roles that he played, both in the Department of Defense and the intelligence community. And so, as I read the fact check articles that came out over the next few days, as they were just confirming, yeah, he really is who he says he is. And people are speaking for him as a person. And then he's being taken seriously by the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community. He's briefing Senate Intelligence, and ultimately Senate Intelligence goes on to produce the first version of the UAP Disclosure Act, which has, the power to take back from the military industrial companies flying saucers and alien bodies, right? Like most people don't even know that any of this is happening.
Yeah.
But it's just like this. This is just a true historical feature of what has been going on, in particular in the government of the United States. And fortunately, I haven't had anybody really push me on the legitimacy of my interest in this subject, because we're, philosophers, we think about weird things all the time. And so people don't care all that much if I start thinking about the implications of aliens and flying saucers, right? But if someone did push me, I could just be like, look, all academics are allowed to think about this now, because the government of the United States, if only for this reason, the government of the United States, the Senate passed, not just tried to pass, the Senate passed the first version of the UAP Disclosure Act. And then, of course, it got stripped down in the House. So, we need to start asking ourselves, what would it mean if the claims that David Grush is making are true? I kind of realized that as soon as David Grush hit. So I went into kind of what some people call ontological shock, right? Mm. Like my worldview shifted and I realized, oh, I know nothing about what's been going on. So I just started frantically reading and watching YouTube videos and listening to podcasts and talking to anybody I could. Actually, for the most part, I did that alone. It was kind of me and ChatGPT in the middle of the night, talking about everything, right? I'd find out about a book and I wouldn't have time to read the book. So I would just kind of go hit up ChatGPT and be like, all right, what's basically going on in this book? And there are some books like Jacques Vallée's Passport to Magonia that I've read in its entirety, because it's not easy to summarize and it seems very important to me. So, it's not that I've never done a deep dive, but most of what I've been doing is kind of skimming along the top of all the stuff that people have been sharing and trying to understand what the long history of this has been going on. And, there's kind of these two ways of thinking about it, is sort of from the 1940s forward here in the United States, especially. There's been a lot of secrecy and strange claims being made by people who claim to be whistleblowers who work inside these programs, or, declassified memos from the CIA or things like that, that there's a lot to know. And then I wasn't paying any attention. So I came to it through Grush. I started paying attention to the kind of US-based stuff, especially. And then I knew from the beginning, look, if they're here and they've been here since the 40s, probably they've been here longer than that. We have these strange accounts of the airships in the 1800s and the, Jacques Vallée talks a lot about parallels with things like fairy lore. And, we've got that medieval manuscript from Germany about an apparent battle in the sky. Mm. And my background is in Christianity. There's strange wheels in the sky and beings coming from the sky and lights moving through the sky all over the place and there. And so, I'm still puzzling through how to make sense of all that stuff. But I was very open to the idea that there have been other beings engaging with us for a very long time, who knows how long. And then the Nazca Mummy stuff kind of hit. But to answer your question briefly, I'm not good at answering questions briefly. I didn't pay any attention to it at all until David Grush. So everything I know I've learned literally in the last year and 4 days.
As a podcaster, it never bothers me if a guest answers a question long form. One, if it's rambling nonsense, I can make that sound like not rambling nonsense. I'm going to leave your rambling nonsense in because it was fine.
Good, I like
otherwise, it's one word answers, and that can make for a really short show. So, I appreciate the answer. It's a lot of information, which is good. And I wonder then, if you just got into it a year or so ago, and you say, you're quite right, many folks even now aren't seeing this information on mainstream media. In the UK, if you ask 100 folks who is David Grush, I think you'd be lucky to find 1 in 1,000 who could tell you who he is. I imagine in the States, even though it made the news in quite a big way for a while, David Grush done Rogan, again, it's that wave, that kind of roller coaster, the peak's gone, and we're back at a kind of low level for now. Did you know who Dave Fravor was, Ryan Graves was, the Tic Tac incident? Did you know about that? Because that had been in the news for the couple of years previous, or is that stuff you're oblivious to?
So I wasn't entirely oblivious to it. I remember when the New York Times article hit, and it was enough to just kind of lightly pique my curiosity, right? Yeah. Like, that's weird. I wonder what's going on there. That they seem like credible people. I've always been an aerospace geek. I wanted to be a fighter pilot for a while, and then I wanted to be an astronaut. I went to space camp a couple of times, right? Like, so I've always been fairly aware of what's going on in the aerospace world. So when people started talking about the Tic Tac incident and the other, Go Fast and Gimbal, and some people were saying like, maybe it's just a classified project from Lockheed or someplace like that. And I was immediately dismissive of that. There's no way that's what they are, because that would be such a quantum leap in our capacities, aerospace capacities, if they're real, and it's not some kind of a natural phenomenon, then it's aliens. I came to that conclusion in 2017. And, but I just was like, I don't know, we're not going to figure this out. I guess they're going to set up this new organization and look into it, and we'll hear more about it later. I think I kind of assumed that it was probably some kind of a natural phenomenon, like, most of the universe we think is made up of dark matter, which is just a fancy way of saying we don't know what it's made up of, right? Yeah. And we're always discovering new things. And so who knows? Maybe it's some kind of small black hole passing through a bent time space, and a pilot saw it, and we'll discover what it is eventually. That's kind of where I was.
That still sounds pretty incredible, though. Like, it's just a small black hole passing through a part of space and time that's been bent,
But I mean, that's just astrophysics, right? Like, the universe is very strange, and we keep discovering strange things. Now I didn't look into the details, remember, right? So I wasn't familiar with the degree of testimony that people have about the kinds of objects that they've seen, that make it actually sound like people are seeing a craft, like a metallic object with lights or seams or whatever, windows, right? Like, I wasn't aware enough of how many people had been saying they were saying those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So 2017, Stephen Brown was basically like, I don't know, maybe it's aliens. It's probably some kind of strange astronomical phenomenon that we don't understand, and we'll get to it eventually. But I knew then there was no, well, personally, I still, I know people debate these things, so I guess I don't want to come across as too pompous, but I never took seriously the idea that it was like a classified US government project or like a Lockheed project. Like, no way. There's no way that we have anti-gravity technology unless we reverse engineer it. We didn't get it through the ordinary, physicists come up with theories, and then we build things based on engineering. We didn't do it that way. If we have anti-gravity, we got it from aliens.
Yeah. It's not like discovering penicillin by accident. Someone was mixing petrol and diesel one day and went, oh, anti-gravity, this is new.
I mean, or maybe it would, but if that did happen, it would revolutionize everything. So either we don't have it at all, either prosaic humans don't have anti-gravity tech, or it's so deep underground that it's not trickling into the economy and producing other technology, right? So it would have to be, like David Grush is saying, this like super compartmentalized, siloed kind of access, because we've not seen any other use of anti-grav, and there would be just tons of other uses of anti-grav. So again, like if that had been invented in a lab at Ohio State, then, you know, we wouldn't be, you know, we would be asteroid mining by now.
Yeah.
Cause there's just so much money out there in minerals and, you know, everything. Like, the wealthy and powerful people, if they had access to the knowledge that this stuff existed, they would be building technologies and building businesses and rebuilding the economy based on top of that. And they aren't. So either, you know, we don't have it, or if we have it, it's so deeply underground and siloed that, that most people, it's not impacting the economy yet.
I think a lot of listeners and viewers will appreciate you've went on quite a hyper-accelerated introduction to the UFO phenomenon to get pretty up to speed. I'm reasonably impressed, I'll say that much. And honestly, and the presentation, so the presentation when I watched that, Stephen, was thinking critically and open-mindedly about the Nazca mummies. I watched that twice now, again, most recently today on YouTube. And like I said earlier, that first kind of, 20, 25, 30 minutes is a wonderful summary and introduction. Now, I'm going to take a guess at the age range of 50 to 60 people you say were in that room are between, 17 and 20?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a little older than that, maybe 21, 22, right, by the time they were getting to be seniors.
Yeah. Sure. And I could tell that would go down really well, because you don't speak to them like they're stupid. You don't bore them to death with a subject. You're really honest, and you'll say things like, well, that should be crazy, shouldn't it? Or this is going to sound weird, but, and then, like you say, you hit them with logic, you hit them with facts. And I love the way you present the opposite way of, you know, Carl Sagan and maybe some of the more debunking quotes around the subject of, here's the obvious facts that we know. And then I believe, like, you know, the conclusion, for example, is, however, I've not observed any aliens, so there aren't any. However, actually, based on the logic, there are aliens, and here is the evidence, and that's where you go into the Nazca mummy stuff. Interesting, like you say, you've covered Grush, you've covered all of that. I'm going to get into A Tale of Two Hearings. So you start comparing, from my point of view, the US hearing in July with Grush, Fravor, and Graves, and the Mexico hearing, which happened where the bodies were presented of the mummies. And I'm going to say mummies in quotes, because you quite rightly point out...
That's fine. But everybody calls them that.
They are, yeah. But,
so they're the mummies.
But that's relevant. Okay, so they're not being mummies. Does that term, mummies, given that it's factually incorrect, is that detrimental to what's being presented?
I don't think it's that detrimental, because I think the term mummy, like in its technical use, involves organs being removed from the body for the purpose of preserving them. And these are not, apparently, don't seem to be that. Although I've heard mixed reviews on this, apparently there is some evidence that some, at least with some of them, organs might have been removed. But for the most part, they look like they're just dried out. So technically they're desiccated corpses and not mummies, but most people don't use the word mummy that way anyway. So it doesn't really matter that much, cool. I don't think.
From the beginning on that then, so you've got these two hearings. One, I think you've been pretty clear in why you're listening to Graves, Fravor, Grush. You're hearing what you're hearing. It's a wow moment. You're seeing the debrief articles. People like yourself are picking this up and going, here's a story I need to pay attention to. There's something to this. You then see the mummies being presented. What about that resonated with you, that it's something you picked up and ran with?
So it's several things. The reason I did that first whole section is because I think you will approach things like the Nazca mummies very differently if you've already made the paradigm shift from there's probably not aliens to there probably are aliens, right? I think I mentioned earlier that my kind of historical area of interest in philosophy has been primarily philosophy of religion. And there's an argument from a guy named Richard Swinburne. He's a Oxford Christian philosopher, about the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus. And he's, you know, considering these arguments against miracles that philosophers like David Hume have been using for a long time. And Swinburne makes this argument that Whether or not you think that Jesus rose from the dead, for instance, will depend on your background beliefs about, like, whether or not you believe in God and whether or not you believe that Jesus is the kind of person that if God existed, God might resurrect him from the dead, right? And so you've got that kind of background worldview, and then you evaluate evidence in light of that background worldview. So the punchline of this for me is, you know, if you ask a question like, did Jesus literally raise from the dead, you're going to approach that really differently if you're a person who already believes in God versus a person who doesn't. And what that means is you may or may not be able to use the resurrection of Jesus as evidence for God's existence, right? You might have to believe in God in order for it to be rational to believe in the resurrection. Does that make sense? And I'm inclined to think that something similar is going on here with the Nazca mummies. Like, I'm not sure, certainly what's known to the public right now, I'm not sure if people who don't already believe in aliens should believe in aliens because of the Nazca mummies. That might not be right. But if you do already believe in aliens, then I think it's quite plausible that the most straightforward interpretation of the Nazca mummies is that they're aliens. I just want to quickly say on your podcast, like, I use the term alien very broadly. I know sometimes people use that term equivalent with extraterrestrial, and I don't. So I leave alien to just mean it's kind of historical meaning of other, and we don't really know what they are. So So for me, when I was primed for the Nazca mummies in the sense that I had already gone through my David Grush ontological shock. I already believe in aliens. I already suspect that they've been here for a long time. And then they hit the scene. And then, as I say, like, some of these Latin American scientists, medical people, researchers are presenting these arguments that strike me as very compelling. And so that's really what got me thinking about them.
Yeah, you state, and I think this is very fair, for you're going to see folks, particularly, and hi to everyone in the YouTube comments, saying, this guy's not a scientist. You very rightly put, and I recommend people go and watch your presentation, because it's really interesting and it's fun, and I think fun can be missing really a lot in this subject at times. You're not a scientist, but I think you say you're a self-educated amateur, I think it's something along those lines.
Yeah, like I'm kind of a an intermediate level science understander, but I'm not speaking as a scientist in that video, right? Like I'm just talking about kind of how to think about the testimony of people like Dr. Zelda Benitez, who's the forensic scientist who's in charge of forensics for the Mexican Navy, right? He was the one who convinced me that these things were worth paying attention to. But we're in this kind of weird situation as people who are non-experts in the sciences, right? Which is that there are scientists on both sides, right? And unfortunately, a lot of times, if you're speaking only to English speakers, you might get someone who says, hey, you know, my day job is I'm an anthropologist, or I'm a paleontologist, or I'm a whatever. I look at CT scans all day long. And I looked at these things and they're fake. And you can just kind of take my word for it. Like, that's an appeal to authority, right? Like, hey, you don't know how to read CT scans. Hey, you don't know what goes into anthropology. Hey, you don't know what goes into paleontology or whatever. I do. So you can just take my word for it. Well, that would be fine, except that we have archaeologists and paleontologists and anthropologists and forensic scientists and hand surgeons and biologists who are in Latin America, who are working at universities, working in hospitals, working for the Navy, who have actually held these things and actually run them through scanners and actually studied those things more directly. And their testimony conflicts with the testimony of these kind of casual debunkers that we're seeing in the English-speaking world. And so there's this kind of background problem, which is the people in the English-speaking world who are like, hey, I have relevant expertise. These things are obviously fakes. Ignore them. Are not taking seriously the credentials and the degree of work that's been done by the Latin American folk who've been looking at this thing, at these objects for now, whatever, 6 or 7 years they've been working on them. And so an appeal to authority isn't going to work here. Right? And so the reason that I think it can be helpful to have a philosopher in the room is that I can kind of hear what's happening from these various competing experts and try to structure them together and see, like, how do these arguments fit together and how should we evaluate testimony in a situation like this and how do we think about expert testimony when expert testimony is in conflict. And that is someplace where my expertise is actually relevant.
Yeah. On this Nazca Mummies, I wasn't going to do any shows on it initially because I've spoken about it a few times on various kind of breakdowns and whatnot. And I personally didn't feel the way it was presented to me, I didn't have enough to follow up on. I didn't even know where to start sometimes on where to follow up on who is actually involved in this, why they're involved. One of the immediate red flags to me was Jaime Musan being involved, because for me, he's someone who's been associated with a variety of hoaxes, kind of false flags and whatnot in the past. And there's a list of those, and whether that's deliberate, unfortunate, he's just the wrong place at the wrong time, or very naive, who knows? That's for other people to decide, okay?
Sure.
Yeah. Jaime comes out and fronts this, so immediately I've got my backup, and so do some others. It's been very divisive. I don't think there's two sides of this fence. I think there's multiple fences with different cross-sections here, and people jump between them. Yeah. So I jumped in, spoke to William Gallison on the subject. William was really, really interesting. Great reaction to that pod as well. I think he never convinced me otherwise, but he made me open my mind a little bit more to this. And a lot of folks said the same thing, which is, I think you're just trying to present the information. What I noticed when you presented the main folks involved in this, you had all of those you mentioned, plus Thierry Jamin, who is the French archaeologist and explorer, who initially had the mummies presented to him by essentially the grave robbers or tomb raiders, if you want to call them whatever.
Yep.
Is it Huaqueros? Huaqueros, they're known as?
I don't speak Spanish well, so I won't say it better than you.
I'll keep you right. Yeah.
I say Huaqueros, but I'm sure that's not right.
Yeah, I've probably butchered that and said something totally inappropriate, but that's the gist of it. Yeah, the Tomb Raiders, Grave Robbers, presented this to Thierry, and that's what I talked a lot about with William. I noticed in naming all of those folk, you never once mentioned Jaime Musan, who has become the front for this. Why is that?
So for the reasons that you brought up, right, that people have been so dismissive of this because they see him associated for whatever reason, correctly or not, they take him to be a problematic source, and so they ignore the rest. And so I very specifically made the choice not to talk much about Jaime. I have a couple slides on Jaime in there. But one of the main things I wanted to say in that video is, Jaime actually has very little to do with the relevant evidence. He wasn't involved in the case at all from the beginning, right? Thierry was the one to whom the person called Mario, that's not his actual name, but like the person we all call Mario. When Mario brought some of the bodies or the parts of the bodies, I can't remember, Will knows more about the details than I do there. To Thierry. Thierry took them seriously, and he went to the Ministry of Culture and tried to get them to take it seriously, and they didn't take him seriously. And that created this massive series of problems that continue to face the problems of the Nazca mummies, because they were not taken seriously. So you know, ideally what would have happened is the Ministry of Culture in Peru would have said, okay, this is really weird and interesting. Let's get involved and let's find out where this site is, and let's protect it, and let's get some archaeologists and paleontologists and whatever experts we can into the site and figure out what there is and figure out what there isn't. And that didn't happen. And so what has happened is, Thierry has kind of been involved in it since the beginning. He's tried over and over and over again to get people involved with relevant expertise to look at the scans, to look at the DNA, to look at the carbon-14, to look at the bodies, right? He's very open about this. I've talked to Thierry several times now. He's invited me down there many times. I haven't been to Peru yet. I'd like to go to Peru. Just have to figure out the airfare. A lot of the story already happened before Jaime got involved at all. And then Jaime, was involved in producing this Gaia documentary. And again, people are dismissing it because Gaia was involved. And so I'm trying to steer clear of that. Now I want to be clear about where I personally stand with Jaime. I have not yet spoken to Jaime. I understand why people are critical and concerned about Jaime, but I think worst case scenario, Jaime is excitable and exaggerates and jumps to conclusions prematurely. I do not believe that he is a hoaxer. I do not believe that he's deceiving people. I certainly don't believe that he is somehow responsible for the production of the mummy's bodies, right? Like, he wasn't involved at the right time. So one of the things that people suggest is that because Jaime's involved, there's actually quite a lot of money in the air, and, you know, maybe he could hire somebody to produce these things. And that's just not understanding the timeline of what actually happened, right? So no. Wherever these things came from, they came through Mario, and Mario and a small group of these Tomb Raiders, we'll call them Tomb Raiders for now. These Tomb Raiders, they are the ones who are the source. Thierry didn't make them. I don't think Jaime didn't make them. Right. Obviously the Zalza Benitez and Rios Lopez and all the faculty at the University of Ica, they didn't make them. So if they were made in modern times, then they were made by the Tomb Raiders or people that they hired. But these are people who live in Palpa, Peru, which is a little tiny town. They're not sitting on boatloads of money. They're not sitting on state-of-the-art medical engineering labs or special effects labs or anything like that. And at this point, if you think that it's a hoax, then you have to explain how Mario and friends managed to produce now dozens and dozens of these bodies of different types that can be run through medical scanners by medical professionals, scientific researchers who can hold them in their hands and do analyses on them and say, we don't think these things are fake. We don't know what they are. They're very, very puzzling. And that's what the faculty at the University of Ica released this statement, right? Like, we don't know what they are. We're not saying they're aliens, but we are saying they have not been glued together from animal bones and wrapped in paper, right? Which is one of the debunking claims that's been floating around since I think it was Estrada Moreno made that claim, right? They're saying, no, they're not that, right? So, like, if it's a hoax, it's an incredible hoax, and it's being pulled off with very limited resources in Palpa, Peru. That's the part of it that that together with some of the details of what the bodies are, and at this point I know more than most people do about what the bodies are, that's the part that gets me, that makes me keep talking about this, right? Like people, they find something, even very, very, very smart people, they'll find something about the Nazca mummies that's too weird to be true. And then they will just jump to the hoax conclusion. And I want to say, look, there's two possible, well, there's actually three possible explanations here. Three possible explanations of what they are. They were either once upon a time some kind of a living thing, which is what they appear to be at surface level. They appear to be dried out bodies, right? So they either are dried out bodies of some kind of living thing, or they're manufactured, crafted, you know, they're dolls or something of that sort. And if they're dolls, they were either made recently or a long time ago, right? So they're either actual bodies, or they are modern hoaxes, or they are ancient archaeological objects, right? Like ceremonial dolls or something like that, right? Like, those are the things that they are. And everybody just keeps latching on to the modern hoax hypothesis. And there are tons of problems with the modern hoax hypothesis. It doesn't explain all of the data straightforwardly. I think it's one of the other two. Personally, I still think they are actually the dried bodies of some kind of a living thing. But even if they're not, I think the second most interesting, the second most likely hypothesis is that they were made 1,000 years ago as ritual dolls or something like that. In which case, even if that's true, then they're one of the biggest and most fascinating archaeological discoveries of all time, right? So everyone's latching onto this one explanation. The Huaqueros must have built these things just to make money. honestly, even if that's true, it's fascinating because at this point, I want to know how they're doing it, right? Like I have CT scan data from five of the bodies that look like Josefina, three of the bodies that look like Suye. Those are the little ones that have the little wing shaped things on their back. And I forget how many I have of the ones that are kind of full sized, human sized. I have at least four or five CT scans of those, right? I can say, like, if Mario knows how to build these things in a way that I can sit down with medical professionals and show them the CT scans, or veterinary professionals, or I don't know, is veterinary a form of medicine? Whatever. I've sat down with a veterinarian, a gynecological oncologist, a couple of other people, a radiologist, a reconstructive surgeon. I've sat down with a number of people, an anthropologist, and said, look, here's what's interesting about these things. And I'll show them the 3D reconstructions that you can make out of these CT scans. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, look at this and look at this and look at this. And they'll go, yeah, that looks like the inside of a living being that's dried out. Now, then they're going to go, but that thing looks weird and that thing looks weird and that thing looks weird. And I think it might be a hoax, right? And I don't want to overstate where we are as a community of intellectuals who are trying to take this seriously. Most people are still convinced, even when they look at the data, they're still convinced that it's a hoax. It just in my experience, that's people keep going to the hoax hypothesis. But I'm stubborn here, right? I'm like, but look at this, right? But like these features, for me in particular, it's features internal to the chest cavity of the bodies that, like the ones that were presented in the Mexico hearing. I call them J types, which just means like Josefina. Josefina was the first one that was given serious analysis. I look with my non-expert eyes at the CT scan reconstructions of what's happening inside of those chest cavities. And I have five of them. And I can say, well, look at this structure that runs behind the central bony column that runs through the middle of their body. Unlike our spinal cords, which run along the back, they run through the middle. They pivot forward toward the front and then they go up. There's a strange kind of open honeycomb shaped structure behind that forward pivot. And that's consistent across all five specimens that I have access to. And I will show the scans of that to serious medical people with scientific credentials and say, doesn't that look like a living thing that's all connected up inside? And they'll go, yeah, it really does, right? So we as a community of intellectual scientist types, curious people with credentials, are not convinced what they are yet. I am personally still convinced that the best explanation is that they were once alive.
You've answered a few of my questions in there, and you've answered them well. Again, there was kind of what for you stands out. Again, appreciate you're not an expert, but you know enough, and you're with other experts. You're discussing it properly. You're remaining open-minded and try not to be too biased in what you're seeing. But for you, it's quite conclusive. But I wonder, what then, in your opinion, is holding this back from being the major scientific breakthrough or discovery that it appears to be? I'm still skeptical. Obviously, I'm a huge, huge, huge proponent of the UFO topic. I want everything to be real. I want every single video, picture, body, piece of evidence to be genuine, alien, non-human, whatever it might be. But they're usually not. But I keep going. I want these so badly to be genuine. Why are people like me and others still holding back? What do you think is missing?
So there's a lot that goes into answering that question. One is still that the there's still a really massive stigma in place, right? Especially in academia, the world that I hang out in. So I know there are a lot of people who are involved at looking at these bodies and looking at the DNA and looking at the scans and the skin and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of serious people involved, and quite a few of them currently want to remain anonymous. for because of the stigma, right? Like if you are, if you don't have tenure, right, then it's dangerous for you to be perceived as someone who is involved in taking seriously these views that are seen as the fringe, right? There's this concept, I think it's called the Overton window, right? Which is kind of the range of views that you can take seriously without being ridiculed in public, right? And it's outside of that. Isn't that what it's called? Overton, sorry, I'm Googling.
No, that's all right. And I'll be honest, I understand that. I understand why anyone, not just this, but any aspect of the UFO topic, if you want to talk about the stuff Dr. Gary Nolan's been looking at, or a Kevin Knuth looks at, or a Jacques Vallée, I understand why any of their very, very serious colleagues may privately look at it and go, Jesus, that's quite remarkable, but do not let anyone know I've looked at this, and I'm not sharing my opinion publicly. I can understand that.
And I mean, look, good. I'm glad you do. And I hope other people do too. Like, if you look at what happened at University of ICA, right, I think there were 11 or 12 faculty members who signed that basically said, we looked at these things and we don't think they're fake and we don't know what they are. If you watch what happened in the kind of UFO sphere, the skeptic debunker world, when that happened, is everybody attacked their credentials immediately, right? Like, oh, what is this little tiny university in ICA? Who are these people? They're not really accredited, right? And there was just this like really deep rejection of the expertise of these people, essentially because they work at a not particularly well-funded university in Peru, right? And this is one of the reasons why I do get uppity about this, right? Like, I'm mad at how willingly people will dismiss the testimony of serious scientists and serious anthropologists and serious, right, everybody that's involved in this, just because they're in Latin America, right? And they don't work in a highly funded, really well-known research lab in the United States, right? And one of the reasons why, I'm not saying this about you, but one of the reasons why I'm talking to you today is because it is starting to get more momentum, largely because there are some Americans who are starting to pay attention, right? And so, anyways, that's part of it. Like, one of the reasons is because not a lot of well-known scientists from places that people recognize are paying attention because of the stigma. That's one part of the answer to your question. Another part of the answer to your question is that the case is just incredibly baffling for many reasons, right? There are at least four distinct types of bodies, at least. The ones that look like Josefina, those are like the ones that were in the Mexico hearing. The ones that look like Suye, the ones that look kind of like Maria, those are the full-time, kind of the full-size human body ones. And then there are these hands that are like this big with very like lots and lots of bones inside of them, lots of knuckles in them. Those are all very different from each other. They all have different features. They all have they've been analyzed by different people. There's been some confusion about, we have some DNA. There's three sources of DNA that have been published. And it's like with one of them, the one called Ancient 0003, there's been debate about which being that's the DNA of, right? So essentially, I put essentially all of the blame here on the Ministry of Culture in Peru, because they didn't take it seriously. What's happened is there's been this fragmented approach by people who take it seriously for a little while and then maybe don't. And there's not been a sustained kind of well-supervised research project. Thierry Jamin is the person who's kind of the closest to doing that, and he's doing his best to try to get people information and get the news out there and try to help people understand. But it's been kind of a disaster because it's had to kind of happen underground, right? Yeah. Or at least on the fringes. So that's a reason. But the third reason, and I don't want to deny this, is that the things are really damn weird. And they are anatomically very strange. They don't have, their joints are weird, very different from ours. Lots of people look at them and say, well, they wouldn't have been able to move, or they would only have been able to move in certain ways and not in other ways, so they couldn't have evolved. Like, those kinds of arguments are made. There is something to those arguments. They're very peculiar. If they were functional bodies that could move kind of like us, then they work differently than us in various ways. There are these very strange similarities between features in the skull and features in the brain cavities of llama skulls, camelid skulls. And so a lot of people have latched on to this debunk that the skulls of the ones that look like Josefina, they were constructed out of llama skulls. And that's not a totally implausible argument. If you look at the skulls, like, there really are very strangely similar features there. If it were just the skulls, I would personally be convinced, yeah, they're llama skulls. Somebody carved them up and covered them with fake skin. And then, you know, that's what happened. But for me and for Zalza Benitez, which is the argument that I took seriously at the beginning in the first Mexico hearing, it's the soft tissues that matter. It's the way that they're connected. It's not the bones. It's the way that the bones are connected. And for me personally, now that I've had a chance to spend time with CT scans with some relevant researchers and professionals sitting by my side pointing at things like, isn't that weird? It's the chest cavity. The chest cavity of the ones that look like Josefina, it's strikingly like an alien organism. It's not like a terrestrial organism. Some people talk about how maybe this is like a branch primate or a branch off of the dinosaurs. I really don't think that hypothesis is going to work out. It does not look like an earthly vertebrate.
There's a few follow-ups, but I'll leave those for the listener questions because a few of those go back into it and I'll just be retreading the ground. I think there's an element as well, and I think you've addressed a lot of the skeptics or debunkers. And to be fair, a lot of those skeptics, and I have to throw myself into that hat as well, as much as I'm in the open-minded camp now with all of this, given some of the stuff I'm hearing. There's an element, I suppose, of many folks enjoy various different aspects of the UFO phenomenon. And if you're looking at things from a political progress point of view, folks see things are happening in the US, you know, doors are being knocked on, maybe some barriers are being broken down. Very slowly, are we moving towards something? Maybe, maybe not. And it almost seems like, if I use the analogy of a team of safe crackers all working on a safe for months and months and months, and they're working on different codes and they can hear little clicks now and again, and that's the US political progress. What this seems to have done is someone's walked up and just knocked on the door and it's opened, and everyone working on the safes went, oh, we've been doing a lot of work and really good work, and they've just rocked up and opened it. That looks really suspicious. And that's almost what this does, because it totally blindsides disclosure to say, well, there you go, there's the alien bodies. Next.
Yeah.
Not to say it's as easy as that, but it's almost like that. And I could see why some folks are a little, it's almost too easy.
Yeah. I love, this is a fantastic and very insightful question. So, look, I think that the Americans believe that disclosure is going to come from America. Big D disclosure, like whatever it is that kind of finally tips the paradigm and makes people change their minds about the phenomenon, will come from the government of the United States, finally telling us what they know. We know for a fact, that they know more than they're saying. We know that there are photographs. We know that there are videos. We know that there are radar data. Like, that's not in dispute. Mm. Like, David Grush said in his testimony, I worked at National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. It was my job to look at satellite photographs of UAP. Like, that's what he said very quickly in the hearing, right? Of course we do. Of course we have satellite photos, videos, radar data. We know because of the Nimitz incident, there's radar data. It's never been released to the public, right? Of course they have it. They know what these things are. That's why they sent Fravor out to the to intercept. Like, we have radar data. So the data does exist. We know it exists, and we know it's not being released to the public. Of course we don't know what it is, right? And we don't know what it means. And so there has been, like you say, this like lock picking effort to get at the information that the government of the U.S. does have and is hiding. Everyone seems to think that's where the paradigm shift will come from. And I don't think so anymore. I think it's going to come from outside the United States. And it does seem to be that the history of the past roughly a century has been dominated by the United States. It does seem that post-World War II, when this wave of UFOs goes across the United States and people start talking about crashes and crash recoveries and bodies and all that kind of stuff, it does seem like the United States has taken their position in the global social political order to control what's happening there. You can imagine why this would happen, right? So let's just, I don't try to commit to any specific UFO recovery thing because who knows what's real and who's not, what's not at this point. But let's just take the Roswell incident. Let's just say that it happened just for the purposes of the argument, right? So there was at least one craft that crashed outside of Roswell, and there was at least one body inside of it, and some of that got gathered up. And then the Air Force lied about it, and then they sent it off to Wright-Patterson and wherever else, and who knows what's happened to it since then, right? Area 51 and such, right? Let's say that that happened, right? And then let's say that key individuals in the government of the United States find out about this. When is this? This is right after World War II. This is right at the beginning of the Cold War, right? They're terrified of the Soviets. They're terrified of impending nuclear war because they know the Soviets are starting to build their own nuclear weapons, right? No one's particularly worried about China yet, but of course that will happen later on, right? And then let's say they recover a flying saucer and alien bodies, right? Now, what are they going to be afraid of? They're going to be afraid to tell the American people, hey, it turns out that aliens are real and they can fly in and out of our Air Force bases whenever they want. They can go to our nuclear weapons facilities. They can disable our weapons. And we can't stop them from doing this. That would be something they simply could not admit publicly because the global order would fall apart. Right? There's a colleague of mine, Alexander Wendt, is a faculty in political science at Ohio State. He's written at least one paper on the problem of political sovereignty, right? In order to be in charge of a nation, you have to control the space. And if other parties can fly in and out of your most secure facilities and you can't stop them, then you don't have sovereignty. You don't have a nation. You don't have political control over your own airspace, land space. You can't protect your people. And if you admit that out loud, then you lose all confidence. Your people lose all confidence in your ability to rule. And then you don't have ability to rule. And then your society collapses. And then you have bad stuff. So let's say that someone briefed the president on that fact. What would the president do? The president would hide it. The president will do exactly what David Grush says he did, which is to create Manhattan Project level secrecy and bury it and silo it. And maybe they could do something to try to figure out what's going on, but they would just bury the shit out of it. Do we think this happened? Yeah, we think this happened. We have documents that prove not that it was buried, but that prove that at least since the 50s and 60s, there are at least dozens of official declassified documents from the CIA in particular that just prove that the government of the United States has taken flying saucers, UFOs, very seriously since at least the 1950s. Yes, they exist. They're not ours. They're not our adversaries. We don't know what they are, and we need to know what they are, right? The person, the first head of the CIA, I'm going to look up his name so I don't get it wrong. Hillenkoetter, Vice Admiral Hillenkoetter was the first head of the CIA. He published, or he was interviewed for an article in the New York Times, February 28th, 1960, in which he just says, there is this memo that shows that the Air Force is taking flying saucers very seriously. There are certain protocols in place where they're to be taken as serious business directly related to national defense. And he found that document and he gave it to Congress. There was a there was a New York Times article about it. The Inspector General also confirmed that. That happened in 1960. Yeah, look, it's been there the whole time. The U.S. government's been hiding it. And everyone seems to think that disclosure will come from here. And I would just love it. I would just love it if it came from Peru instead. If it came from this kind of sensationalistic Mexican journalist who grabs these bodies and smuggles them to Mexico. I don't think Jaime actually smuggled them. I think somebody else smuggled them to Mexico. I think Jaime has actually at this point said who owns them. I suspect, I haven't looked into this, right, that Mario smuggled them across the border to Mexico, sold them to somebody in Mexico, and then Jaime brought them to Congress. I think that's what happened, but I don't quote me. I mean, you can quote me. I guess this is an interview, but that's my speculation, just to be clear, right? I would love it if that were the thing, like the first step in really understanding what's going on, if it came from Latin America and not from North America. There would be a real poetic beauty to the United States losing control of the narrative.
Stephen, have you got time to go through listener questions? Because we've been going a while. Yeah,
let's do whatever you want, man. We could talk forever. You're a really good interviewer for one thing, but also, I can't stop talking about this. This is the craziest stuff of the universe. So yeah, let's talk.
No, we'll go back to, like you said, bury the shit. Let's bury the shit out of the mummies for a few minutes, and we'll come back to the mummies. I do want to say well done to Sam at the OSU UFO Club, because you mentioned him in your presentation, and I can't believe
Sam is actually a she, but that's all. Yeah,
Sam. Yeah, well done, Sam, because to be male, female, whatever, at university, running a UFO club can't be an easy gig. If Sam happens to listen to this, or anyone knows Sam, I'll happily pay and send a podcast t-shirt for them free of charge just for running a UFO club at a uni. So well done.
Love it. I'll tell her all about it.
Yeah, awesome. Please do. So I want to touch on you working with the new Paradigm Institute. So I've hosted Daniel Sheehan, lawyer to the UFO Stars and Fraternity, as many will know him, very accomplished lawyer in his own right outside of the UFO field, has been for many decades, but you're working with the new Paradigm Institute, Stephen, to help other academics network within and get involved. Is that right?
Yeah. So what happened was Danny started doing the podcast circuit and talking about especially the kind of momentum behind the UAP Disclosure Act, which then kind of stalled, but is now picking up again. There is a new version of the UAP Disclosure Act that's starting to go through the process again, trying to get it passed for this year's National Defense Authorization Act. He started talking about this organization they were putting together, the New Paradigm Institute. And the reason I like Danny, right, I don't agree with Danny about everything. Danny and I were friendly. We talk every couple of weeks, and we don't always agree about things. He's been very dismissive about the Nazca mummies historically. And I've talked to him about them and say, hey, maybe you shouldn't be so dismissive. They're interesting. Don't equate. If Danny says it, that doesn't mean Steve believes it. And if Steve believes it, it doesn't mean Danny does, right? So we're different people with different approaches. But the reason I like Danny and the New Paradigm Institute is because Danny is the only public figure, in my view, who is talking enough about how impactful this is going to be. For people to actually go through the paradigm shift required to move from not taking alien stuff seriously to taking it seriously. Danny talks a lot about disruption to the economy, disruption to the political order, disruption to people's psychology. Like I think it's not taken seriously enough how much the human self-identity is as the peak of evolution, right? Honestly, it's really fascinating to me that this is happening at about the same time as the AI revolution, right? I also think that we're being faced with the reality that very soon, like in the next couple of years, there will definitely exist an intelligent being of some kind which is substantially smarter than a human in every way. We will accomplish advanced general intelligence, and then we'll just be able to scale it. And so there will be an advanced intelligence that is more intelligent than us very soon. There will be humanoid-shaped robots with advanced capacities to move through the world that will be able to do most of the tasks that human can do better than humans soon. And this is not low scale, low alleged low skill work is not what we're talking about anymore. We're talking about ChatGPT has already passed the bar exam. ChatGPT has already passed medical exams, right? Like we're talking about lawyers, doctors, et cetera. Like those are the ones who are going to start losing their jobs because of AI. And so with AI and the aliens, like humans are going to have to face this crisis of identity that we're just not ready for. Like, what if we're not at the peak of evolution? What if we're something like cosmic adolescence, right? And one of the reasons I love Danny so much is because he really recognizes that, right? Like, how can we help humans understand their intrinsic dignity even if we are nothing more than cosmic adolescence, right? So anyways, that's all, I talk too much. But that's the stuff that Danny kind of attracted me with. So I approached New Paradigm Institute as soon as he started saying, we're trying to recruit academics to think about what this looks like in a university context, syllabi, classes, resources, et cetera. I started emailing, like, I want to be involved in that. And I got to have some nice conversations with Jim Garrison, who's the one of the people in leadership at New Paradigm Institute. He works in DC. And then I've been able to talk to Danny a few times. And I started talking to them about... Well, in particular, the thing that got me kind of in the door was I was talking about the review board that was described in the first version of the UAP Disclosure Act, which had, I think it was a foreign policy kind of a person, a domestic policy kind of person, political wonks,
yeah,
an engineer, a sociologist, an economist, and I don't know, there was something else in there, a historian. Which, first of all, that all by itself is weird, right? Like, why are we getting a sociologist involved if all they're going to say is, oh yeah, Lockheed developed anti-grav in the 50s and we've been hiding it, yeah, from you, right? Like, that's a weird thing to do. But under the assumption, which I assume, that what is about to be disclosed somehow, either sneakily from Latin America or kind of surprisingly from Latin America, or less surprisingly from Congress finally passing something. Although honestly, that would be more surprising, all things considered, for Congress to do anything. What would be, sorry, I got off the, too many rabbit trails there.
I keep the politics out of it, because that's another one, the emails will fly in, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, it looks like obfuscation and push for disclosure have been coming from both sides of the political aisle here in the United, yeah, States, right? So this is not a partisan issue. This is bipartisan both directions. I was talking about this review board, right? And I was like, there is no way that review board, as described, is big enough, diverse enough to be able to handle the task of deciding, how do we tell humanity that we have been in contact in one form or another with non-human intelligence for decades? Minimally, you would at least need a psychologist, right? Like a psychologist who understands, paradigm shifts, trauma analysis, right? Like everybody talks about ontological shock. Like, man, we better have a psychologist in the room then who knows how to deal with people who are going through these really traumatic kinds of worldview shifts, right? So I started talking about that, and I was like, look, I don't think we can trust the Congress of the United States to have a good plan here. Look at the history of climate change in the United States. But you don't have, not only in the United States, but I'm in the United States. Look at what we've done. It's very clear that scientists have been saying since at least the kind of 50s and 60s that we're dumping too much CO2 into the atmosphere. This is very likely to have problematic impacts. And it's just the evidence has been getting clearer and clearer and clearer. And what has the government of the United States done about this? Basically nothing. Why? I don't know. It's complicated. Politics in the United States is complicated. But Congress is essentially impotent. So can we trust them to put together a really thoughtful plan by appealing to all of the relevant experts in all of the relevant fields? No, we shouldn't. So what should we do instead? Let's just do it. Let's just do it ourselves, and let's just do it now. We don't need the information that is being hidden. We don't need radar data and videos and satellite imagery. We don't need any of that stuff to start asking the question, what would it mean for humans to come to grips with this possible fact that something like Roswell actually happened? Let's just say, what would it mean? Look, okay, let me say this very, very clearly. I think it is obviously the job of academics today to start thinking about the implications of what David Grush has been saying. If David Grush is correct, then the biggest worldview shift that has ever happened on this planet is about to happen at scale. And we need to start thinking about what that actually means. How is this going to impact the economy? How is it going to impact the political order? How is it going to impact psychology? How is it going to impact relationships? How is it going to impact religion? And who are the people who are best equipped to do that? Honestly, in my view, it's the academics. Why? Because academics are nerds, right? They've fallen in love with some particular field and they've decided to spend their life on it. Is academia a relatively well-paying job? Yes. Are people in academia because of the money? No. Every academic could be making much more money than they are if they would just do something that was more straightforwardly capitalistic. Why are they doing this in academia? Because they love it. Here's all these people who have been studying every field of inquiry that we've ever had, and we need them. We need them now. So we need academics to start thinking now, writing papers now, putting together think tanks now. I'm not saying we should do one of them. I think we should have many. I'm glad that the New Paradigm Institute exists. I'm glad that the Soul Foundation exists. I'm glad that Galileo Project exists. I think there need to be more and more serious academic attempts to bring together people who care about these things, who are thinking about the implications of them, and coming up with a plan, because I guarantee the government of the United States doesn't have a plan that is well thought through enough to actually take us through disclosure into a stable situation.
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free, and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.